good afternoon to you all. I was just reflecting upstairs that I suppose I may not have too many more press conferences with you. I shall miss you all, but there's a little time to go before that happens yet. Well, thank you for coming. It seems some time since we had a press conference. So I called this press conference this morning in order to outline the steps which I intend to take to further the policy I laid out to you some months ago that I would follow as I move towards the end of my mandate. And you may recall then that what I said was that I wanted to use the remaining months and weeks in order to do two things. First of all, to finish the tasks which I set myself nearly 4 years ago, and the second was to open the way for the next phase of BIH's development towards full sovereign statehood, which will take place under my successor, who I anticipate will be announced this week. So this falls into the second of those two categories. Today I'll be proposing legislation to be put before the BIH authorities, which will carry forward the process of handing over the powers of the international community to the BIH authorities, which I foreshadowed some time ago. This is possible, and indeed it is necessary, because BIH is now firmly on the road to the European Union. This process will begin now, but will of course be completed by my successor. So, in pursuance of this strategy, I have today written a letter to the Prime Minister and to members of the Parliamentary Assembly of BIH outlining draft amendments to state legislation that would, when passed, place the vetting process, which currently is carried out by OHR, into the hands of the BIH's House of Representatives. And we hope that that could commence straight after the next elections of October 2006, so that the new government of BIH elected in those elections would be not vetted by OHR, but passing through a process of scrutiny by the domestic institutions. Now, as you know, the vetting of ministers has been a very active part of my mandate and has so far been conducted by the international community and coordinated by my office. And you will recall that in carrying out that vetting process, we check people against the ICTY register, against the knowledge that is held about them and their past activities. In future, if this legislation comes into effect, that will no longer take place. Nicola Spiric, quite often somebody who leads the way in these matters, suggested a few months ago that the BIH authorities themselves were ready and capable of doing this job of scrutiny or vetting, and I agree with him. You may recall also that I raised this possibility in my speech to the BIH Parliament in July this year. I said then that the beginning of the SAA negotiations would trigger further steps in the continuing process of handing over responsibility for the running of the country from OHR to the BIH authorities. I think I would make the case, and many others would too, that the vetting process has undoubtedly improved the quality of governance in BIH, and it seems to me that it is also clear that it is in BIH's long-term interest to preserve some process of vetting or scrutiny. But it's time to integrate that system of quality control for senior government officials into BIH's own system of governance. Before describing exactly what we're going to propose to do, let me first explain why I think vetting is so important, especially important in a country like BIH. In my inaugural speech nearly 4 years ago to the BIH Parliament, I said that one of the key areas of my work would be to try to strengthen the systems that scrutinise government and prevent abuses of power. During my mandate, it is a matter of some regret that we have all had very strong examples about how some candidates with frankly scandalous backgrounds have been nominated for ministerial offices that they were patently unfit to hold. Too often, political parties look on high-level posts as a reward for party loyalty and an opportunity to give jobs to their friends. Too often, they view these positions as a function of control or an opportunity to steal the people's money, rather than as a chance to advance the interests of the country and of its citizens. We have to protect the citizens of any democracy from the consequences of bad government and corrupt practices. So, over my mandate, I've tried to take steps to improve the quality of government in BIH, and you recall what those steps have been. Politicians' immunity is now severely limited, and in consequence, those who are regarded as being the untouchables have now found that they can be brought before a court and tried for crimes. We have also severely limited the scandalous ability to grant and to receive pardons. And in addition, we have begun to establish, and I hope it will continue to be established, the principle that ministers holding executive offices must resign if they are served with a criminal indictment, so as to stand aside from the process of ministerial responsibility while they clear their name through the courts as a private citizen. Those are the normal standards that operate in any European country, and they've begun to operate here too. So I hope that these measures combined will in the future make political parties think twice before putting forward for high office individuals who have a questionable or obviously scandalous past. But these measures by themselves are not enough, in our view. BIH's decentralized, complex administrative system has to be shielded from incompetence and criminality in high-level posts. And if BIH's aim is full EU membership, then you must uphold the highest standards in public life. So, what new amendments do we now propose? Well, the amendments I shall be placing before BIH's democratic institutions today will give BIH's Parliament responsibility for ensuring that candidates are suitable for office by establishing a public and transparent process of parliamentary scrutiny for key executive appointments. Parliamentary confirmation of government appointments and open public scrutiny of that process is a feature of many established democracies. The one we have chosen after much thought is quite closely modelled, incidentally, on that which exists in the United States. And the process is divided into two separate parts. The first part relates to eligibility, and the second part to suitability. Now, you will recall that every candidate who puts their name forward for election is assessed as to eligibility by the Election Commission. But you'll also realise that in the governments of BIH, it is possible for Prime Ministers to appoint people to hold executive opinions who are not deputies and would not therefore have passed through the eligibility process. So there is a system which establishes their eligibility, and then there's a separate system which establishes their suitability. So these procedures will require ministerial candidates to provide their detailed information about their personal history, professional qualifications, activities during the war, and financial dealings. This information, which will be put onto this sheet, a copy of which will be handed out to you, it's very full and it's very detailed. This information will then be verified by SEPA and the BIH Election Commission. The length of this process will take approximately one calendar month, as we see it. On the basis of that information relating to eligibility, the Chair of the Council of Ministers will then decide which candidates to put forward as nominees, and the confirmation process, which deals with suitability, the confirmation process by Parliament will then begin. The parliamentary confirmation process will be public. The personal history dossier, that is, this dossier, submitted with each nomination, will be public and will be published. Obviously, confidential information as to bank account numbers, etc., will not be published. But the rest of the dossier, the full dossier, it's a very full form, will be published. If these amendments are passed, a parliamentary committee on confirmation will be established. That committee on confirmation will be part of the Council of Ministers, and which will include one member of each party represented in the House of Representatives. One member of each party. Now, quite deliberately, we've done that in order to give an extra weight to small and opposition parties, so that large parties that may have a dominance cannot corrupt the system. The committee will review the qualifications of nominees. Any member of the committee will be able to call on a nominee to testify in public before the committee regarding his or her suitability for office. The committee will then make a recommendation to Parliament. It's a recommendation. It's not binding. Parliament does not have to accept the opinion of the committee in making its recommendation. On the basis of this information, that is, in the public dossier, plus the hearings process, plus the committee's recommendation, the House of Representatives will then vote, as it does now, to confirm each nominee individually. In the case that the House votes against the recommendation of the committee, parliamentarians will have to explain to the public why they've gone against the recommendations of the confirmation committee. Now, let me be very clear and blunt. These provisions apply at present only to the state level. In my view, all executive officials playing a role in BIH's governance should be submitted to these procedures. But we're trying to establish them first at the state level. I hope they will then be emulated at the entity and cantonal levels as well. Both SEPA and the Election Commission have confirmed to my office that they can and are content to perform the functions required by them in this process. So let me finish. If adopted, these amendments will increase massively the transparency of governance in BIH. These amendments will open government up to public scrutiny. It will be, in effect, the citizens who are, if they wish to be observing this process, spectators of the process. It will in effect be the citizens who do the vetting, not the High Representative, because all of that information will be made public. They can make their own views known to their elected representatives and through the medium of the media in BIH. And by the way, here I have a plea to make to all of you in the media. The role of the media in ensuring that this process is public and proper, and that public opinion is mobilized in order to defend quality candidates and turn down corrupt ones, the role of the media in this process will be vital to its success. The aim of my proposal is to open the vetting process to public scrutiny, but you are the people who unlock the door to that public scrutiny, and I appeal to the media to play its part in this process. And I appeal to you also to ensure that this legislation, when it is put through Parliament, is not so amended as to make it toothless and meaningless. We will want to know why members of Parliament may wish not to be subject to full scrutiny. I have no doubt that there will be some who do not like the idea of public scrutiny of senior government executive positions. I hope the media will pay very close attention to the passage of this legislation and to any amendments entered to weaken it as it goes through Parliament. So these amendments will now go to the Collegium of the House of Representatives. There is no reason whatsoever, why they should not be adopted by the spring in time to be implemented at the general election in October next year. And if they are implemented, then the OHR will relinquish its duty of vetting and hand that over to Parliament and the people of BIH. Thank you very much. Your questions. On this topic first, and then on any others.
Nezavisne novine. Ja moram priznati, meni ovi vaši amandmani dolaze u jednom vrlo čudnom trenutku. Svjedoci smo kako su dvije vladajuće političke partije u federalnom parlamentu prošle sedmice imenovali sudiju Ustavnog suda. Demokratičnost i procedura se apsolutno ništa ne može zamjeriti, jel? Raspisan je javni konkurs, izabran je veći broj kandidata, super tajno glasanje na skrivenim papirićima u kutiji i ostalo, i jako dobro znate kako je to završilo. Gdje vi zapravo crpite optimizam da će ove procedure koje ste vi tako sjajno zamislili biti zaista i ispoštovane na način na koji ste zamislili? Jer ukoliko i na sljedećim izborima dobijemo parlament u kom će dvije ili tri političke partije imati većinu, bojim se da će sve ove ovako dobro zamišljene procedure pasti u vodu.
That's up to you. I don't elect this parliament, you do. We have given this country the chance to join Europe. We have given it the structures of a light level state, decentralized, in the last 3.5-4 years. They're all assembled. This country now has a future that can be wrecked at any time by parliamentarians who come into power, who want to throw away the opportunity which the people have won in this country. But listen, the days when the High Representative selects as the Parliament and selects the government are over. It's the ballot box that will do this. And if the people of this country cannot elect a Parliament that will act in their interests, but rather act in a way which confines BIH to the ethnic straitjacket, you can't have the future that's now on offer for you. So, you didn't hear from me optimism, you heard from me reality. These are the systems that can be put in place for a modern European democracy. No democracy is proof against the foolishness or corruptness of a parliament. It can happen in Britain too. So that's a question you should ask yourself rather than me. Now, on the question of the Constitutional Court, look, I have been very concerned about what's happened. The Constitutional Court in this country has a right to strike down the judgments of any court in the land, any judgment in the land. To get the construction of the Constitutional Court wrong could reduce the whole structure of the rule of law in this country to a heap of dust. It would be a very, very, very bad thing if the Constitutional Court, the highest court in Bosnia and Herzegovina, was simply reduced down to the level of a political playground. That every decision that went there was a decision taken on the grounds of ethnicity or on the grounds of what's of benefit to a ruling party. and I'm talking about of economic benefit to a ruling party. That would be a disaster for BIH. I'm not talking about a procedure which was improper. Procedure was proper. I'm not talking about the qualities of an individual candidate. I'm not talking about an individual on this occasion. I'm talking about a principle. And the principle is that those who stand, who are elected to the Constitutional Court, are elected to put the interests of the nation as a whole, not the interests of one ethnicity against another, first. And are required to be people of the highest, not only moral standing, but also technical qualifications. If we reduce that down through a non-transparent fashion to yet another of the political playgrounds on which ethnic politics can have full sway in Bosnia and Herzegovina, we will suffer greatly in the future. So yes, I am concerned about that decision. It was, in my view, insufficiently transparent, and it was, in my view, a decision which could lead to the simple ethnicization of a court that ought to be above ethnic politics and ought to be the final bulwark for the rule of law in this country. I did frankly think, as to whether or not we should put the selection of constitutional court judges into a system like this. In the end, I decided we shouldn't do it. And the reason we shouldn't do it is because you should not mix politics and judicial matters. They're two different issues and they must be kept separate. But I think there is a case for considering how you can make appointments of judges to the highest court in the land subject to a more transparent process and proper scrutiny. There is a case for that, and I hope that's a case that will now be considered. It would be a tragedy for this country, having built the rule of law highly effectively over the last 3.5 years, if the highest court in the land were now to move in a direction which simply made it yet another ethnic playground. Anybody else?
Nije vezano u potpunosti za ovu temu. Mirela Ćosić, BH televizija. Kazali ste da će vrlo skoro biti imenovan vaš nasljednik. Možete li potvrditi da će to biti gospodin Christian Schwarz-Schilling? I drugo pitanje, jučer ste donijeli odluku o smanjenju plaća sudijama. Rečeno je kako će biti ušteđeni milioni, međutim nije rečeno koliko će tačno plaće biti smanjene.
I cannot make an announcement about my successor, because that has to be an announcement. The choice has to be made formally by the international community and announced by the international community. I anticipate that that's an announcement which will come during the pick, and I cannot anticipate that announcement today. As to how much the judges' salaries will be reduced, that depends. You will know that one of the purposes of this is to harmonize salaries across BIH. At present, salaries are much higher in some areas than in others. So it depends where the starting point is. Overall, salaries will be reduced, and overall they will be reduced back over time to a given harmonized level. But that means that salaries in different cantons, some of which are higher than others, will be reduced by more than others. For instance, looking at it as I recall it, when I looked at these figures last week, the salaries of Birchko judges will be reduced by only, I think, 2%. The salaries in other areas will be reduced by much more than that. So there's a variable level. Does that give you an answer? Okay, thank you.
Sejan Ivanović, Dnevni Ovaz. Danas je general Gotovina izjašnjavao u Hagu o svojoj krivici. NATO istovremeno vršio pretrese kuća u Bosni i Hercegovini, tražeći one koji podržavaju Karadžića ili njega lično. Čini se da vlasti Republike Srpske ne rade ništa na tom.
It's not up to me to say how much the authorities of Republika Srpska are or are not doing. It's up to Carla Del Ponte in The Hague. She's the criterion for this, and also our security forces who are aware of these things. I'm not. What I can say is that thanks to the extreme pressure which was put on last year, including, of course, the 59 who I removed and the 10 before Christmas, that if you recall, initiated last year's Christmas RS crisis, the New Year's RS crisis. I can say that as a result of that pressure, 11, for the first time, 11 war criminals have now been transferred to The Hague with the cooperation by the Banja Luka authorities and the Belgrade authorities, either alone or working in cooperation with each other. And that's good news. It does mean that Mladic's most senior generals are now in The Hague, with the exception of Tolomir. I mean, the question to ask of Ratko Mladic is, why are you a coward? If your generals have had the courage to face up to the charges in The Hague, what are you doing skulking? What are you doing flitting from safe house to safe house in Belgrade, living the life of a fugitive? Why are you a coward, Ratko Mladic? That's the first question. And the second is this, that now that Gotovina has been transferred to The Hague, we know two things. We know this can be done, and we know that Europe is completely implacable. The international community's authorities are completely implacable in insisting that it is done. We have one down, we have two to go. This job is not finished until Karadzic and Mladic are in The Hague, together with Juplanin, Tolomir, and the others who are indicted on the Hague list. And I want to make it very clear that unless there is progress on this matter, then there is pain to come. It's as simple as that. If we can solve this issue, there are good times to come. If we can't solve this issue, there is pain to come. That's what's happened before, and it will continue to happen since. The fact that you're in SAA now does not in any way reduce, indeed, Gotovina's arrest increases. Now, the isolation of, and the spotlight, the sharpness of the spotlight that now falls on Banja Luka in Belgrade. Get this job done, and get it done quickly. Unless you do, there are bound to be sanctions to come.
Jasenko Krijeć, BH Radio 1. Odgovarajući na prvo pitanje, rekli ste da su prošli dani kada je visoki predstavnik postavljao parlamente i vlade i da nije posao, dakle, visokog predstavnika, da će sada biračke kutije da to rade. Pa samo da mi kažete koji je visoki predstavnik vlade i parlamente postavio 96. 98. 2000. Koje godine?
That's history and I don't comment on history.
Ja sam htjela zamoliti samo odgovor na jedno pitanje. Rekli ste da će neki podaci o kandidatima u budućnosti, jel, neki podaci o kandidatima biti tajni. Možete li pojasniti šta će to biti tajno?
Just simply the personal details of, for instance, bank account numbers. Obviously, for reasons that you'll all understand, it would be improper to publish details like bank account numbers which could lead to damage to that person's individual lives. So, all public information will be made public. I think there are certain small personal items. If I'm a member of parliament in Britain, I have to fill in a form which tells them what shareholdings I will have, what firms I'm involved with, whether or not I've received any gifts from anybody from abroad, a whole host of information, but none of that concerns, that does not include my personal bank account details and so on. Exactly the same will apply here. So any matters related to their public holdings of financial dealings will have to be published. Any matters related to their own bank account numbers, individual confidential matters related to health, of course, do not have to be. But those are issues for Parliament to decide on. You'd like to know members of Parliament's bank account numbers, would you?
Mislim, ako neko ima dug od 7 miliona prema banci, naravno da želim znati.
Yes, but that's not your job to investigate. Forgive me, if somebody has a debt of 7 million to a bank account, this is not to say that SIPA will not be investigating it. It is not to say that the authorities will not be investigating it. They will be. That information will have to be provided. The appropriate information will have to be provided to the authorities that provide confirmation of the information. But it's not provided to the press. I'm sure the press and the public would not demand to know somebody's bank account numbers. That's a private piece of information that authorities may need, but the public doesn't. But let me be very clear. The full information, leaving aside those very small amount of personal details, the full information about bank account holdings and so on will have to be published, and the full information will have to be checked also by SEPA. It's pretty simple. If you want to see what happens, take a look and see what happens in Britain, France, Germany, anywhere else. Okay?
Još jedno pitanje, Mirela Ćosić, BH Televizija. Vi ste u martu donijeli odluku o privremenoj zabrani raspolaganja državnom imovinom Bosne i Hercegovine i ta odluka još uvijek je na snazi. Međutim, postoje slučajevi, konkretno recimo općinsko vijeće Ravno donosi odluku da se zemlja u pograničnom pojasu da ide na licitaciju. Možete li komentirati tu situaciju i ko je u biti sada nadležan da to spriječi? Da li...
I don't know the details of the situation. If you'll provide it to OHR, we'll see if we can find the answer for you. Let me say to you that I established a property commission, state property commission, that would look at all state property more than a year ago. Unfortunately, that commission is only now meeting for the first time. I hope that it would do its work more quickly. If it did, as soon as it's done its work, we can start relaxing the freeze on the sale of property. But it's important that this is done in a proper, measured fashion. So it's up to the State Property Commission to begin to draw up the decisions that would be necessary to allow me to release this ban. If you believe there has been an individual infringement, presumably you do, about a single case, is that what you're referring to? Then let us have the details and we'll take a look at it. Okay? Thanks very much.